the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Hard part of the South, progress cannot wait.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Pod of the South, a production of Change Tennessee. Pull up a chair and refill your sweet tea as we peel back the layers of Southern politics to get a better understanding of what's going on and why it matters. My name is Gabe, and of course, it's another week of our schedules hating us, so you get my dulcet tones for the next little bit. Don't worry, though, we have something awesome coming down the pipeline for our next episode, so be sure to stay tuned for that. But this week, we're going to take a look at how we arrived at the quote-unquote fake news era and the prevalence of alternative facts. At the foundation of everything that we're dealing with now in this alternative fact, fake news era, you get into the American obsession with fantasy. And we're going to go all the way back to the colonial days. And a good place to start this discussion from is if we just take a look at the Salem witch trials. You know, they're huge. Every middle schooler learns about them because it was such a big deal for us as a fledgling nation. Over the course of the Salem witch trials, there were over 200 people accused of practicing witchcraft, but only 20 people were executed. 19 were executed, one was pressed to death for refusing to admit their practice of witchcraft. So only about 10% of those people who were accused were actually found guilty and executed for the crimes of witchcraft. So really what it came down to is a case of mass hysteria, of people just making shit up, and everybody believing it because there was no way to disprove them. They said it, so it's true. And this situation of mass hysteria, it actually comes back later on. I mean, it's pretty common in American history and societal history, not just in the United States, of people drumming up mass hysteria to foment a belief system or a theory that doesn't actually exist, nor is there any evidence to back up that hysteria. They just get it going, the crowd gets riled up, and it just keeps on going. That snowball just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But again, let's go back to the Salem witch trials. With these 200 people that were accused, there were no actual evidence of witchcraft. It was a lot of people getting sick, people getting ill, crops failing, and most of these cases were based on what's called spectral evidence. Which spectral evidence is the idea that the accusers saw a specter of the person that they were accusing who they think caused them to cut their family to come down with this illness, their crops to have a blight, whatever it was that the accusation was. But the kicker about this spectral evidence and these formation of these specters is they believed that it was the devil doing this, but the devil could only use a person's image with their permission. So therefore, because there was a specter in the likeness of Jane Smith, of John Doe, that was the evidence that they were practicing witchcraft and they had made a deal with the devil. There was no actual real evidence, just person A saying, I saw a specter of this likeness and they came through and wiped out my crops, they slaughtered my cows, or whatever the accusation was. And so there was no real evidence there. Most of these complaints and accusations actually just came from feuding families. But again, they were able to whip up this hysteria and create this fantasy counterintuitive to the reality of the situation, and people just bought into it, and it just kept, again, like I said, it just kept snowballing and getting bigger and bigger to the point where 20 innocent people were killed because of this mass hysteria. There was no actual witchcraft or anything. People just wanted to believe something, and so they did. All of this is kind of happening around what a lot of people know as the Age of Enlightenment, which was all about discovering, learning. It was, you know, the foundations of questioning what was considered common knowledge, which gave way to a lot of scientific discovery. But also gave people the license to reject proven science. Now, science at the time was still very fledgling, and we were still discovering a lot, but there were some things that were set in stone and that were widely accepted as fact, and still hold true to today. Kurt Anderson, the author of Fantasyland, describes the Age of Enlightenment as a time that encouraged liberated people to believe anything whatsoever. So going back to what we were just talking about, you could be enlightened, you could be liberated, and just start questioning anything. The sky's not blue. Grass doesn't grow. Gravity's not real. It gave people the license to come up with whatever fantasy they wanted and gave birth to a lot of the early time charlatans and snake oil salesmen around, because they could create their own fantasy, their own world, and could use it under the guise of the Age of Enlightenment. They were learning, they were discovering, when really they were just blatantly lying and had no evidence to back it up. But once they got a crowd behind them, their fantasy became reality. So now that we've laid the foundation, kind of going back to the pre-colonial days or early colonial days, let's kind of get into the formative years of Americans' obsession with fantasy and ignoring the truth. I kind of want to focus on three big things right in here. The first one I want to start with is the invention of homeopathy, which homeopathy is the idea of using home-based cures, using nature-type stuff to cure illnesses. It was based on the concept of like cures like. So if you have a stomach ache, you take something that would normally give a person a stomach ache. That way they would butt heads, counter each other out. You know, if you have a headache, you take something that would normally give you a headache. The way that they made these homeopathic remedies is they take a substance. So you take some nightshade and you dilute it, and then you hit it or shake it, and that causes the solution to memorize the form of the original substance, so the nightshade essence for this example. And then you just keep diluting it and hitting it to memorize it, and diluting it and diluting it and diluting it. Well, the remaining solution contains virtually none of the original substance. So homeopathy was basically, and homeopathic doctors, if you want to call them that, were basically just selling water. And it's still to this day, homeopathy is quite popular. And all these people are doing are selling water with a little droplet of something in it. And it's so small, again, it contains virtually none of the original substance, but they're selling it to these people and making them think that it's going to cure whatever their ailments are. The reason it was able to become so popular is because of poor medical procedures at the time. I mean, again, we're talking late 1700s, early 1800s. Medicine is not what it was then as what it is now. So they didn't have the sanitation practices, they didn't have the knowledge of certain diseases and illnesses on how to cure those. So it opened up this door for homeopathy to exist. Like, hey, that doctor kills 60% of his patients, my nightshade remedy has a 50% success rate. I have a success rate that's better than the doctors. Why would you listen to these doctors? But these homeopathic practitioners were just snake oil salesmen selling bullshit to people, making them think it was helping them. And again, there was a big enough following to where the facts didn't matter. It didn't matter that they were just selling overpriced water. What mattered is that these people thought it worked. So in their reality, it worked. This is not a placebo. We are not talking about a placebo effect here. We are talking about people hucking water and calling it medicine. So there's one kind of thing where you can kind of see where things are happening and laying the foundation and building to where we are now. Now we're going to kind of switch gears and start talking about the science side of things. We're going to talk about the entertainment side. Biggest one is P.T. Barnum, and he's attributed with the phrase, "There's a sucker born every minute." We've all heard it. It's widely attributed to P.T. Barnum, but there's no actual evidence that states he said this, so it's up in the air, but the fact that it's so commonly attributed to them, you can kind of get an idea of where we're going with this. You know, P.T. Barnum was kind of the circus guy, you know, the sideshow. He popularized the sideshow freaks and that kind of thing. His first big breakthrough was something that he called the Fiji Mermaid, and what it was a mummified creature that had the top half of a juvenile monkey and the bottom half of a fish. So that was made to look like a type of mermaid, you know, half person, half fish. And what's important to know is he contacted some naturists, people who studied nature and the like at the time, and none of them would verify its authenticity, because they all knew that it was a fake. This wasn't a real thing. Mermaids did not exist. P.T. Barnum's Fiji Mermaid was not a real thing. But people could see it. How can it not be real? Here it is in front of us. I'm looking at this Fiji mermaid. And so it kind of set up the rest of his cons. Another one that he was really popular was the world's smallest man. It was a 4-year-old that he claimed to be 11. P.T. Barnum had garnered credibility through his mermaid, so sure, why wouldn't he be able to find the world's smallest man? And really, he was just pawning off a small child and saying that they were a teenager, basically, you know, saying they're full-grown child. So, of course, that's going to give the appearance of the world's smallest man. And P.T. Barnum was notorious for these cons, for these ideas or these sideshows that people thought were real, but were really just him making shit up and chucking it to people and building this fantasy that people were taking as reality. You know, again, kind of when we're talking about these formative years of American fantasy, another one is famed author Henry David Thoreau. His writing was hugely popular, you know, and to this day, every English high school English class studies his writings and his books. Big thing about him is he was obsessed with nature. He romanticized man living amongst nature and wrote these massive passages about how wonderful it is for man to be in tune with nature and to be surrounded by nature and nothing but the wilderness, and how the luxuries of society will be our ultimate downfall. And just this very flowery, grandiose ideas of how man should live amongst the wilderness and nature. The thing is Thoreau himself was not much of an outdoorsman. Where he lived and where he claimed to be was not a far walk from a nearby town. So while he lived in a cabin and lived among nature and the wilderness, he did not want for any modern amenities. He could go to a market very easily. He didn't have to do hunting. He didn't have to do a lot of stuff. But because of the way his writings were and the way his writings romanticized nature and wilderness, he created this fantasy that is where we needed to be, despite himself not actually adhering to that mentality and to that ideology that he claimed. And again, that romanticization of nature has creeped all the way up into today when you start driving around the suburbs and you look at subdivision names and neighborhood names. Emerald Shores, Magnolia Hills, you know, you name it. You can just go to just drive around the suburbs and pay attention to the subdivision names. And you'll see that they're very much, I paint this image of a pastoral lifestyle, even though it's in the middle of the suburbs. You know, there's no deer field around, or, you know, sprawling meadow lane. You know, all that shit doesn't exist, but we have this obsession and this romanticization of this imagery that doesn't actually exist. And a lot of that can be traced back to the way Thoreau wrote about nature and how we came to be obsessed with it and think that we can bring that to life through fantasy. We're going to fast forward to today, and I kind of want to stay on the entertainment side and, you know, kind of just pivot a little to Disney. I mean, Disney is a place where you go to escape reality, to insert yourself into this fantasy land that was created to as an escape, as a theme park, to get out of reality, to surround yourself in things that aren't true, but are reality because they are around you, because you are inside of it. It is a reality. The whole concept of Disney is creating a fantasy for you to live in, to take yourself out of reality and replace it with a realized fantasy. So it's a little, kind of a little thing, you know, when we look at Disney. But with something that has a little more substance and had a lot more impact on us as a society, I want to take a look at the 1980s Satanic Panic, which, how we talked earlier about the mass hysteria with the Salem witch trials, here it comes again with mass hysteria getting something going and creating a snowball effect of people making claims that have no backing or no evidence whatsoever, but their friends said their cousin's brother's sister's in-law saw this thing, so therefore it's true. And you just keep repeating those and repeating those and repeating those. And it got to the point where during the Satanic Panic of the 1980s, there were over 12,000 cases of satanic practices reported to the police. And it all started from Michelle Smith in a recovered memory therapy, in which she claimed that during this type of therapy, it came to light, she remembered these repressed memories of her being taken and having satanic sexual and physical abuses done to her in the name of worshiping Satan. Recovered memory therapy is not a real thing. The brain does not work like that. It has been time and time again disproven that recovered memory therapy is not real. You cannot create these repressed memories that these people are talking about because these things never happened. And again, with over 12,000 cases of reported satanic sexual or physical abuse, there was never a single piece of evidence found in any of the investigations. So the people are making these claims that, oh, I remember this thing that happened to me, but there was never any evidence of that thing happening. The most popular case or most commonly known case about the satanic panic is the McMartin preschool trial, in which a preschool teacher was accused of sodomizing a student of the school in the name of satanic ritual. The trial went on for 7 years, including investigations and the actual trial, and just destroyed the school, destroyed the reputation of the people who worked at the school, and not a single charge was filed. It went on to become the most expensive and longest trial revolving around the satanic panic. And again, not a single charge was filed, but because these people created this false sense of reality and this false sense of what was happening and had massive public buy-in, it became a reality to the point where it was investigated and huge amounts of resources were poured into it. You know, we have it, the satanic panic is happening again today. As of time recording, you know, the city of Houston has an ongoing investigation for what happened during the Astroworld Music Festival. And there are a ton of semi-viral posts on social media accounts that are accusing it of being a satanic ritual in which the people who were trampled to death were actually sacrifices in a satanic ritual. No evidence of it whatsoever other than these people saw this thing that reminded them of something else that had this vague allegory to a thing they read. No real evidence of it, but because they believe it, it is reality, and there are enough people out there to buy into it to make it a reality. No evidence of it, they think it, so it's true. And so this kind of gets us into the age of Trumpism. The most popular thing that came about during Trump's term in office was alternative facts. Well, you have your facts, I have my facts. And even though fact A is based in reality and has something to back it up, I have my facts. I have my alternative facts. Alternative facts are not a real thing. All they are is a way to refute reality and to not accept what is going on because you disagree with it. And that also ties into his other big thing that he loved to claim, and that's fake news. And fake news has become a huge talking point and a huge thing that everybody is using now, whether left, right, up, down, anywhere on any political spectrum or in any type of discussion and dialogue. If you disagree with something, you can just label it as fake news and you don't have to worry about addressing it because it's fake. You don't agree with it. It does not fit your reality. It does not fit the fantasy that you have crafted for yourself. So therefore, you do not have to adhere to it. I've got news for you. That's not how it fucking works. You have what happens in reality if it does not line up with your viewpoints, rather than just shutting it down and coming up with alternative facts, calling it fake news, and just writing it off entirely, you have to reevaluate where you're getting your information from. If 99 people say that a dog has 4 legs, and you believe, and your alternative facts say no, a dog has 3 legs, something's going on there. People are telling you something that you need to reevaluate and see why this is. You cannot just write it off as fake news and write it off as an alternative fact that dogs have 3 legs. And if a dog has 4 legs, then it's not actually a dog. Or there's something else going on with it that's why it doesn't. People have come to create a reality that they don't have to worry about because they have these cop-outs of their own facts that have no grounding in anything backing them up. And anything that disagrees with them, they can call fake news and not have to worry about addressing it. And as we've kind of discussed going back, you know, a lot of this is, once you get enough people buying into something, you don't have to worry about it. because you have the mob mentality behind you to stay in your echo chamber to reinforce what you're saying. You don't have to come to terms with you being wrong, because you can just go back into your bubble and they're going to pump you up and give you the information you want, even though none of their information is backed by anything of substance. And when we kind of talk about building for the future and building a fantasy world going forward, let's take a quick look at what's going on with Meta and Facebook. Meta being the new overarching company of the Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Oculus world, very similar to how Alphabet and Google. And one of the projects that they're working on right now is creating a completely virtual world to where you can build the community you want to live in. You don't have to live in reality anymore. You can put on your VR headset, your Oculus, whatever other VR headsets you want, and live in a completely virtual world that you craft to your taste and your reality. You can do what you want, and that becomes your fantasy reality. Nothing matters because you made it the way you want to, so now it becomes your reality. It becomes the way you see the world. And that is an incredibly dangerous path to go down because, as we've discussed, it's very easy for people to just shut down anything that's true and just believe in what they want and take what they want and claim it as reality because that's what they're Minecrafted. We're not far from people taking these virtual worlds and thinking that that is how the actual rest of the world functions. And it's going to lead to a very dangerous future when we can just put on a headset or put on goggles or put on anything and tune out what's actually happening because we created this fantasy that has twisted our reality to what we want and we live in that false reality. It's kind of a lot, you know, setting the groundwork for everything that's happening and going from Salem Witch Trials all the way up to what's going on right now with the Facebook Meta virtual worlds that they're building. And it's not just Facebook and Meta that are building these worlds. I mean, you look at the online gaming communities. You know, people go in, tap in to escape the world and create a virtual reality for them. But how did we get here? A lot of it is, you know, in the pre-information eras when it was very easy to control a narrative. You did it by having journalists on your payroll, a la P.T. Barnum, or you got a cult to follow you, or anything else like that to give you an echo chamber and to get momentum behind you. But really accelerated in the past 35 years or so happened in 1987 when the Fairness Doctrine was abolished by the FCC. And what the Fairness Doctrine was is news organizations and news outlets had to present both sides of an argument in the interest of public education. That way, both sides are being told. Once the Fairness Doctrine went out, it gave rise to people like Alex Jones, to Rush Limbaugh, you know, these conspiracy theorists where they didn't have to talk about both sides anymore. They could sit there and talk about their side of things and didn't have to give a damn about what was actually going on. Real popular refrain is, you know, Alex Jones, the fish are, you know, the water's turning fish gay or whatever that batshit insane conspiracy theory he has going on. With the abolition of the Fairness Doctrine, we no longer had a way to hold him accountable to present a valid argument on why he thinks the fish are turning gay, or whatever the hell it is. I don't know, Alex Jones is insane. But it gave way to them, to him and the Rush Limbaughs, like I said, to the Sean Hannitys, not having to have a reckoning with what they were saying because they presented their argument and their viewers bought into that one side of the story. And then they had their echo chamber to go back into, and they were able to foster a community that only believed what they were doing. They created their own sheeple. You know, they no longer had to worry about anybody holding them accountable because they had their community, they had their bubble of which they could live in. You know, and now kind of tying into the Facebook, especially Facebook, going on right now is, you know, we're in the information age. The internet has been huge for allowing people access to information. Anybody can post anything anymore. Anybody can be a quote-unquote expert. There's no more vetting. You know, to put your opinion out there, to tell your side of a story, it doesn't have to go through a journalist asking you questions and poking holes in it. You can just log into your Twitter account, you can log into your Facebook account, and you can write a small essay on why the Astroworld Music Festival was a satanic ritual and that the people who were trampled to death were actual sacrifices to Satan to bring about the end of times. We've had many end of times over the last few years if you were to pay attention to social media, because no one needs to be vetted anymore. There's no filter from when it comes out of a person's mouth to where it's disseminated into the masses. And this has been huge for the rapid spread and dissemination of information and of misinformation. Again, anybody can post something, one person like sees it and they agree with it, they can share it, and then another person can share it, and all of a sudden you have 500 people sharing something that has no grounding in reality, but because they agree with it, it is true to them, and they can pass it along and keep that wave of misinformation building and keep building a fake world, keep building a fake reality of which they live in by themselves, and the rest of us live in the actual reality. And because of this, there's not enough time to verify this information. Misinformation spreads faster than trying to disprove something. Because that takes research, it takes critical thinking, it takes actually putting the time in and listening to what they're saying and figuring out why they're saying that and where it's coming from. And as we've seen, Facebook particularly has no interest in stopping the spread of misinformation. We've seen that the ongoing investigations into them right now after the whistleblower, their data scientist whistleblower who leaked the documents, have seen Facebook had a vested interest in allowing misinformation to spread because it made them more profitable. That's another argument about putting profits over information. Yeah, they didn't give a shit about stopping it, so that's another argument. But even if they did, they are unable to keep up with the spreading of the information because of how quickly it can snowball. Because once it's online and a couple people see it, Facebook can police it on their site, but those people can go out into the real world and spread their fantasy there. Once it's out there, it can easily be spread by word of mouth of people talking about this and spreading that misinformation and creating that false reality that Americans live in. Through all this, I hope you guys have seen how easily and how much America fosters a creation of a fake world and false realities. It's very much American to say something that is not true and take it as a reality. We've seen it going back all the way to the Salem witch trials. We've seen it now with Facebook, Meta, Oculus, whatever the hell you want to call it, creating a virtual world for people to live in so they don't have to live in the actual world. People can just create their own fantasies and live in there, and that becomes their reality. And it's incredibly dangerous because going forward, as views become more extreme on every part of the sphere of discourse, these fantasy realities are going to become more and more extreme, and people are going to bury themselves deeper and deeper and deeper into their echo chambers to where the only way out is a complete breakdown of everything. So I hope you guys learned something today. You know, we have a very interesting history and giving way room for people to spread misinformation, and how it's an inherently American thing to make up ridiculous claims and claim them as truth. We love it. We've always loved it as a society. And I don't think there's going to be much in the near future to change that. But knowing how easily we embrace these as a culture and as a society, it gives us the tools to hopefully avoid that extreme world I was just talking about. And we can move forward and educate people on how to actually live and how to actually function in a normal culture. Thank you everybody for joining us today. Again, my name is Gabe. You can find me on Twitter at Graham851. Be sure to follow the pod on Twitter at pod_south. Be sure to follow us, subscribe, leave us those sweet, sweet 5-star reviews as it helps others discover us and hear the siren song of Appalachian leftists. Thank you everybody and have a great day.
Pod, pod of the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Pod, pod of the South, progress cannot.